early on, it was very, very scary. And so I kind of made a promise to myself, in the beginning that, I would find a way to make his, so much good happen despite, or because of it in a way that I could never kind of look back and wish it, never wouldn't have happened, grateful for what I'm involved with, for the music I'm writing and the people I'm collaborating with. And, I wouldn't have met my partner, my wife, if it weren't for my ear problems, because I wouldn't have written the music on my first album. I wouldn't have released the first album, and she wouldn't have heard it overseas. It randomly came up on a Pandora, internet radio station, some 12 years ago.
Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Rosman, which I hope inspires you through the personal stories of a fascinating diversity of musical guests. Joel Stuyzens is a composer and multi-instrumentalist whose career as a drummer was transformed due to sudden hearing damage. He talked to me about dealing with the physical and psychological effects of hyperacusis and tinnitus, the beauty of hammer dulcimer, and you'll hear clips from his first two albums, Relax Your Ears and Resonance. He's a music educator who loves to help students to make discoveries on their own, and we spoke about Joel's passion for all kinds of artistic expression and its positive recent experience at the Ragdale Artist Residency. Joel's personal story is so inspiring, and his music is so beautiful. Please check out his albums, which are linked in the show notes for you. Like all my episodes, you can watch this on my YouTube channel or listen to the podcast on many podcast platforms, and I've also linked the transcript. It's a joy to bring these inspiring episodes to you every week, and I do all the many jobs of research, production, and publicity. Have a look at the show notes of this episode, where you'll find all the links, including different ways to support this podcast. Hey, Joel, thanks so much for joining me here today.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I've really been enjoying listening to your two albums you have out so far, especially Resonance, because of all the string playing, and I'm a violinist, so I really enjoy the quartet and the cello. Now, you have such an interesting story, which we'll get into, but when I start to look at people coming on my podcast, I think, okay, what are the things? So, you're multi-instrumentalist and composer and hearing preservation advocate is one of your important identities. Maybe it'd be good to get into that for people who don't know your background.
So I think, it was January 26th, 2006. I suddenly woke up with really severe tinnitus and hyperacusis, which is the constant ringing and extreme kind of sensitivity in my ears. Everything from my own voice to the kind of high frequency sound of the water and the sink faucet was bothering me. I soon realized even the birds chirping outside was irritating to my ears. And I was really trying not to have a panic attack. So that would eventually kind of stop me completely in my tracks as far as my career as a professional drummer, and all my performing and teaching and recording, and I had to start some different therapies, auditory neurological therapies with the audiologist that I eventually sought out, and kind of found my own sort of personal therapy. Just with kind of grabbing an old dusty acoustic guitar, that one actually right there, from the corner and picking it up and, holding it against my body and feeling the vibrations, it became really therapeutic for me. And that's how I started writing the music, which would be on my, eventually on my first album. But previous to that, I got a degree in percussion and jazz performance and with focus on drum set. And that was kind of my whole life since I was maybe around 9 years old when I started. Everything was just drums constantly. playing 6-7 nights a week. So it eventually, you know, took its toll. That combined with maybe about a dozen ear infections I had when I was a little kid, was sort of a predisposition of sorts. So yeah, all kind of led up to this particular day that I mentioned, and developing the issues.
Did you have warning signs like the other form of tinnitus where it's sort of like a roaring or whooshing sound?
I mean, I do recall, you know, having some different periods where the ringing would kind of be there, would come and go. And, you know, along this whole period for years and years, you know, like I was wearing earplugs a lot of the time. I even had custom molded earplugs from audiologists and everything before all this stuff started. But, you know, especially when I was younger, I wasn't wearing, you know, a lot of ear protection. But I was, you know, still aware in some manner, you know. I mean, most of the time when I practiced when I was younger, I did have like isolation headphones, but I think mostly kind of the live performing, I wasn't wearing earplugs, cause I just didn't give myself a chance to kind of get used to them, you know, or I wasn't familiar with the different options, available as far as, you know, more musician earplugs with filters so you can retain the clarity of the sound but still protect your ears, you know, things like that. Wasn't fully aware of when I was younger. And yeah, I think it just kind of took its toll little by little. And of course, you know, hearing loss is cumulative and you may not be aware that you're suffering, you know, inducing hearing loss or damage until it can turn into any number of, you know, difficult situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I found your story very chilling because, you know, I'm a professional musician and orchestras are very loud. So we do wear, I have to say I wear earplugs more often now for loud shows than I used to when I was younger. But yeah, just even going out when I was in my 20s, you know, loud bars and stuff, there was no understanding at that time of how damaging it could be. And certainly I've had periods of hyperacusis and I definitely have tinnitus that comes and goes, but I more like a constant sort of like, yeah, it's a different kind of sound, but I could definitely relate. And I was thinking, I mean, your livelihood, your identity, your friends, it must have just, your whole world must have imploded.
Yeah, it kind of did. It's nice that I can sort of chuckle now, right? you know, yeah, it's been, 20 years almost? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's still difficult on a daily basis, honestly, you know, especially the hyperacusis, the sensitivity, the ringing at this point, you know, I could just about care less about it. I've gotten used to it. It's kind of my own little meditation tone. but the sensitivity is still difficult, especially, you know, in Chicago and the noisy city and different areas when I travel and, but like anything, you know, you figure out how to adapt and adjust and hopefully just keep moving forward. And, you know, when the problem started, I sort of luckily saw how far it could really take me down, you know, if I were to let it. And that almost scared me more than the problems. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for example, I have actually had to take maybe 2 or 3 times, like, suicide calls from people essentially with, you know, who have developed the same kind of problems, you know, and I'm not trained for that kind of work. But, you know, early on, it was very, very scary. And so I kind of made a promise to myself, you know, in the beginning that, you know, I would find a way to make as, you know, so much good happen despite, you know, or because of it in a way that I could never kind of look back and wish it, you know, never wouldn't have happened, you know. Mm-hmm. And I am, you know, grateful for what I'm involved with, for the music I'm writing and the people I'm collaborating with. And, you know, I wouldn't have met my partner, my wife, if it weren't for my ear problems, because I wouldn't have written the music on my first album. I wouldn't have released the first album, and she wouldn't have heard it overseas. It randomly came up on a Pandora, like, internet a radio station, you know, some 12 years ago, and caught her ear, and she ended up finding my website and sending me a nice email, and we eventually ended up collaborating on an animation project. She was doing the animation, I was doing the sound design and music, and anyway, that's how I met my wife. and so many different people I collaborate with, and really, like, I'll just mention maybe one more thing, that after kind of spending the majority of my career playing drums on other people's music, you know, now to get to create my own and share it and see that, you know, besides being therapeutic for myself, that putting it out there, that it can be therapeutic for other people, and, you know, people can really get something out of it. It's really makes it, you know, fully worth it.
Well, that's a beautiful love story about Fernanda. I was going to ask you about her because I knew she was an artist, designer, and architect. So I was interested in that, you know, the discussions you might have. But maybe it would be good for people to know what was one of her favorite pieces off your first album, Relax Your Ears. And we could have a clip of that for people to hear.
Oh, nice. that would be nice. I'm not sure if I can remember. I should just run in the other room and ask. Now you really got me thinking about it because I want to sort of give you the right answer.
Well, go ask her. That's fine.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Viv.
Okay.
V-I-V, which is interesting because that's one of those little tracks hidden inside the album that, you know, you kind of have to discover. You know, you have to sort of listen to the whole album to discover that song, I feel like. And it's very, very minimalist, but it has a really nice, kind of uplifting, fun energy, like a lightness to it. You know, like there's a lot of other tracks on the album that have a little bit of this darkness, you know, and for obvious reasons, right, where the music kind of came from. But that's one of the lighter ones that gives you a little break from from all the other super heavy emotional tracks.
Thanks for that.
This is a clip from Viv from Relax Your Ears.
About discussions you might have with your partner about, you know, city design in terms of sound and acoustics and the human scale. Do you guys ever talk about that stuff?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. I mean, being in Chicago, and the more I travel around the world, the more I, I love traveling, but the more I'm thankful when I come back, you know, it's like such a balanced city, as far as, yeah, architecture and design and it's like you can wrap your head around it, you know, unlike New York. I cannot wrap my head around New York. You have the main, you know, city kind of downtown center with the skyscrapers, and then you have all the kind of close neighborhoods nearby, and, you know, there's a lot of green spaces everywhere, and it's just a very balanced city. Did you kind of mention maybe an aspect of sort of noise pollution is the kind of city soundscape? Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, my partner actually is working on a project right now, kind of related to that, and sort of inviting the public to kind of audibly hone in more on the sounds of the river and the lake through the development of some kind of like sound sculptures. I won't go into too much detail here, but yeah, we talk about a lot of that stuff all the time, you know, and have done some different collaborations together related to some of that stuff. And I definitely have a much bigger, deeper appreciation for design and architecture now. And yeah, and my partner also designed the artwork for the, you know, for the album.
For the new album, right?
Yeah, the newest, yeah. Yep. Yeah, because we were kind of talking about Relax Your Ears, my first album. So yeah, for the newer one, Resonance. So that's also super special because, you know, yeah, she heard the music from my first album when she was living overseas in London and sort of discovered my music from that, and then ended up designing the artwork for the next, you know, the next main album. So it's kind of crazy. We still sometimes, you know, sort of pinch ourselves about how that all, you know, happened and went down. And we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary last October and stuff. So it's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice to hear. I was talking to somebody yesterday about how, you know, these long distance relationships over the internet are more and more common, but can be super difficult to navigate. You've never met the person and you're, that must've been some process.
Yeah. I mean, that was just, you know, I mean, it just started as a purely creative,
yeah,
you know, project and collaboration for like an entire year, back and forth. At the time, I think I was using Skype. Is that what it was called? Now everybody talks about Zoom and all the time, but yeah, I think Skype. And I'd only use Skype sort of talking with her, so that just seemed like, you know, that was my little avenue to communicate with her and this project. And then by the end of the project, after about a year's time or so, we both happened to become single, just independently, randomly, you know, so we just naturally started talking more and more, you know.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about cities in Chicago, and I know on Resonance there's a series of pieces inspired by the Botanical Gardens, which is a place you like to go.
Yeah, so yeah, speaking of sort of the cacophony, the noise of the city, yeah, it's really important for me, and, you know, I think should be for everyone, really, you know, whether they know it or not, you know, I think everybody needs a break from sort of backdrop of constant noise. But yeah, yeah, I really like to sort of immerse myself in nature and get a nice break from the sounds of the city. And yeah, Chicago Botanic Gardens, I go up there a lot. Yeah, it just kind of started inspiring, you know, some music. So I just started writing. And before I knew it, I had like, you know, 5-6 or so pieces for the different gardens. Yeah, I mean, there's a piece inspired by the Waterfall Garden, which is for Hammered Dulcimer.
I love it.
Thanks. And I just chose to, you know, just solo Hammered Dulcimer and, you know, trying to just replicate kind of the, you know, the flowing, sparkling cascades, you know, on the dulcimer with some different kind of falling lines, and also trying to capture, you know, the idea of, in some respects, we, you know, think of water as this, you know, kind of very simple, pure, you know, thing, but, you know, obviously it's immensely complex and is, you know, basically the life force, you know, of everything. in some respects, right? And so it has this amazing power as well. And yeah, it's kind of bizarre, right? Because you think about, you take the hydrogen, oxygen elements, and you try to separate them, it can explode. You know, it's like there's all these extreme contrasts and dynamics with it, but I kept it more minimalist.
This is a clip from Waterfall Garden. This video is from a live performance. This composition is on the album Resonance.
Yeah, and then there's two pieces for the Japanese gardens, a piece called Buriji, which is bridge in Japanese, which is kind of a introduction with piano and kind of leads you into the first garden, the first island, past the wooden bridge. And then the theme at the end of Buriji is kind of a darker theme that represents, there's a zigzag bridge that connects the two islands. And as far as I recall, traditionally it's kind of thought that evil spirits can't cross a zigzag bridge. I remember reading that somewhere, and so the idea kind of seeped in. And so I developed this kind of little darker, interesting theme. So the strings kind of come in with that at the end of that piece, and then that leads into the next piece, Niwa, which is garden in Japanese.
This clip is from the end of Buriji from the album Resonance.
For the next island, and you'll hear that theme in the middle of that one again, but on guitar and cello. And so yeah, there's different kind of motifs and things that were inspired directly from, you know, not only just the feeling I get when I'm there in the particular gardens, but, you know, actual architecture even, and design and different things, you know, in the gardens and sort of different folklore elements, and it's all fused into you know, the writing, I think that piece, for example, I was flooded with all this when I got home, and sat down with the guitar and wrote like the entire piece in maybe 10 minutes or something, which is amazing, because, you know, sometimes I'll write a piece and work on a piece for years. Sometimes it'll all come out in 10 minutes, you know. And there's some other ones on there, of course, for the English Walled Garden, which is quite a sonic adventure, quite a journey on that one.
So you're dulcimer. You're the first hammered. Well, maybe you're not the first hammered dulcimer player I've had on the podcast, but the first time we've talked about it. So I looked up. It's at David's dulcimers are built in Oklahoma. There's this company. So did you go down there and choose an instrument? How did that work?
I had been looking for, there's a lot of hammered dulcimers that are smaller and, a lot of people use kind of the little wooden hammers and get this really kind of thin, almost harpsichord kind of sound. That's nice, but, I guess coming from the world of percussion with, marimbas the size of rooms and, drum set and piano and just kind of bigger, bombastic, warmer, instruments and sounds, I just kind of naturally wanted something like a bigger sound and more of a range of color. I found out about David's dulcimers through a friend, Max ZT, actually, of House of Waters, really great, world fusion group. And he's hammered dulcimer master, one of the best around. He's kind of based out of New York now. So I found out about the instrument through him, and I believe another friend here in town. But yeah, eventually I ended up taking a road trip down, getting in contact with him, and got to see the whole workshop and how he builds everything. And he ended up making a custom instrument for me. And it was amazing to see and just be a part of that. It was really special to have that opportunity. But he makes amazing instruments. As far as the hammered dulcimer, interestingly enough, I grew up hearing the instrument as a child all the time because my mom and stepdad were kind of folk musicians and, among many other things, writers. And my stepdad was an editor for the Illinois Times newspaper for a long time. But we would always go to all these different folk festivals. So I remember seeing and hearing it. And then when I moved up to Chicago after college, I started hearing it in the room next door to where I was teaching. And just so happens I was put next to the main dulcimer teacher at the school, which I was questioning because, we had like these drum room with drum kits then next to the hammered dulcimer. I felt bad for her. Luckily the soundproofing was decent, but anyway, it caught my ear and I was like, oh wow, I remember that instrument. At that time I had, 12 plus years of studying drums and percussion, and all these different instruments. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to already have all the facility and technique and coordination, like it's all there already. So I ended up getting one, just kind of translated everything else I'd been doing onto it. Just kind of do my own thing on it.
So that was back before you had your hearing problems. You're already playing dulcimer?
Yeah, that was like 2004, 5, 6, around there, yeah.
Okay. So when I was researching you, Joel, I came across Mac Haygood, who's done all this research on tinnitus, and I was interested to learn about objective versus subjective tinnitus, that for most people, it's not it's in their brain that's creating the sound. Is that the case for you, or can an audiologist perceive it?
Oh, yeah. Most cases that I'm familiar with, it, becomes a neurological situation where you have, damage in the inner ear, those microscopic hairs in the cochlea are just not working 100% correctly. And then the brain ends up misinterpreting the nerve activity from those and kind of creates like a feedback loop. Not too different from like a mic and a speaker or something. And if you really think about it, like a lot of the design of speakers and microphones and things is based off of the human ear, so it sort of makes sense. And that also reminds me when my ear problems first started, I was even hearing like crackling in my ear, like distortion, which is very bizarre. But that is essentially the sound of the microscopic hairs kind of fizzling out that are damaged. So yeah, it's definitely more neurological, and you know, in my experience, and you know, that's why it's so complex as far as, you know, coming up with a cure, mm-hmm. you know, something to really help on some meaningful level. It can be difficult to get there because of the complexities, obviously, with the brain and the inner workings of that.
So I understand you used this neuromonic sound therapy for a while.
Yeah, I did that for maybe 3 years. I did some different white noise therapy as well. And I was just, you know, trying anything and everything that made sense. You know, I tried to vet things. There's a lot of snake oil, as you might say, out there. But yeah, through the guidance of some different audiologists, I tried those. You know, I changed my diet and exercise routine a lot and all kinds of things. In a few years, you know, and collectively, it all definitely helped. You know, mm-hmm. It's hard to point to one individual thing and know what did what. You know,
you said early on that the pitch you perceive is like your personal meditation note. But did you say that ironically, or is it a little bit of that as well, in terms of mindfulness?
Yeah, that conveys, you know, the work I've done to change the way I emotionally respond and think of it, mm-hmm. you know, because in the beginning, it was this intruder and this, you know, invader. But yeah, I had to do a lot of work to change my emotional response to it. And I have done quite a bit of meditation and, you know, it's always there. So I choose to work with it, you know, instead of against it. So yeah, that's kind of what I was conveying with that.
You had mentioned that a lot of people in distress have reached out to you for advice. What is the best advice you usually give them?
I mean, it varies probably quite a bit depending on the individual and the circumstances. But in general, I mean, I try to just convey, you know, to as difficult as it can be, to try to take, you know, this as the opportunity to make, you know, all other aspects of your life and your health that much, you know, better and healthier, and bring as much, you know, good and positive change as you can across, you know, all aspects of your life. And just really try to focus on that, because, you know, the stress makes it worse. And I mean, it's maybe the overarching thing that I try to convey, and just, you know, let them know that I'm here for them as much as I can be. And also different members of the Chicago Tinnitus Support Group that I founded a long time ago, you know, we tried to create a community of people to support each other, but also convey the realness of it, you know, that there's no surefire cure, and it's going to be different for every individual. At least for me, I had to focus on, you know, okay, well, at least this particular situation is not like a terminal, you know, like life-threatening thing. And so, you know, I'm going to have to figure out how to adjust and adapt and, you know, keep, yeah, moving forward, because, you know, you only have one other option other than that, and that's not, you know, a wise one. So, but it's complex, and yeah, and I don't pretend like I am all knowing and all knowledgeable, you know, and certainly not trained in any form or fashion as a therapist or counselor or anything, but I try to just share, you know, from my own experience, anything that might be helpful. Mm-hmm.
This is a clip from Lifeline, from Relax Your Ears.
To your albums, like Relax Your Ears, I understand Lifeline was dedicated to your mother, who was really supportive.
Yeah, I've always been the closest with my mom, and she's definitely always been there for me, and of course she needs to have her own song on my album. But, but with composing and stuff, like, it just always naturally happens. You know, I let everything just come to me. Very rarely do I sit down and think, you know, oh, I'm going to write a song, you know, for this or for this person. Or, you know, it just is a natural process. Lifeline is sort of dedication to my mom. The last piece on the album, Memento Mori, which is essentially kind of conveying what I was just talking about in a sense, which is, you know, try to live each day to the fullest, figure out how to adjust and adapt and keep moving forward, because we are mortal beings, right? And you never quite know when it's going to be your time, and time is precious. But that piece is kind of in the style of finger style of my stepfather, my stepdad. And so in a way, that's kind of a dedication to him. Mm-hmm. Different people along the way who have helped me and inspired me, you know, they find their way into my music just naturally.
This is an excerpt from Memento Mori from Relax Your Ears. Hi, just a quick break from the episode. I wanted to let you know about some other episodes I've linked directly to this one, which I think may interest you, with Jack Hoyt-Litzter, Kirsten Agresta-Copley, Margaret Maria, and Gary Musinski, among so many episodes since 2021. It's a joy to be able to bring these meaningful conversations to you, but this project cost me quite a bit of money and lots of time. Please support this series through either my merchandise store or on my Ko-fi page. You'll find the links in the show notes. For the merch, it features a unique design by artist Steffi Kelly, and you can browse clothes, notebooks, mugs, and more, everything printed on demand. On my Ko-fi page, you can buy me one coffee or every month. You'll also find the link to sign up for my newsletter, where you'll get access to exclusive information about upcoming guests. Finally, if you're finding this episode interesting, please text it to a friend. Thanks.
Now, the wonderful cellist Sophie Weber is featured on both of these albums.
Well, actually, she's not on the first album. Katinka Klein is on the first album, and she's from the Chicago Symphony. And then, Sophie is on the newer Resonance. Yeah, she's from Oxford, England, and I met her here in Chicago. Yeah, we became friends and started collaborating, and she's based in San Diego now. But, she's a wonderful friend and great cellist.
Yeah, I was curious about the Atlas String Quartet. They're like in terms of putting together the album, were things done remotely or was everyone in one place?
Everyone was in one place, yeah. I mean, they do a great job with remote work, you know. For me and my music, it's pretty important for everybody to be, I feel, in the same room. Yeah, I mean, in general, my music is pretty acoustic and intimate and kind of bare and open. You know, I really, you know, think space is important, and sometimes sort of what I choose to not play in the space I keep is even more important than what I do play, you know, the notes themselves. And so to really be in the same room and kind of feel each other's presence and energy and is really important for the proper kind of feeling and emotion to come through, I feel.
And the jazz pianist Rob Clearfield, he's a old friend of yours who plays on this as well?
Yeah, and yeah, we, you know, for a lot of my drumming career, we got to play together in different jazz groups. And he's incredible. And yeah, he's definitely a big inspiration. And in fact, my next album that I'm working on now is going to be all my piano and string compositions. So I'm performing more as a pianist now. And I'm really excited about that.
And when are you going to be releasing that?
I hope at the end of the year, if all goes well. We'll see.
Okay. Now, I wanted to talk to you about teaching, because you had to, like, for people watching the video, they'll see you have an electronic drum kit in the background. And I believe you still teach drums, but in a different way, right?
Yeah, the electronic drums really help me to continue to teach with the tinnitus hyperacusis without it being affected. Because I can have control over the volume, can control the volume coming out of the speaker, or the student can have headphones on, you know. The electronic drums are never going to be what an acoustic drum kit is as far as the nuance and texture and the range of colors and things. But for the main, coordination and technique work, they work, you know, pretty decent. I teach drums and guitar and piano and hammered dulcimer.
And is songwriting or encouraging improv part of your teaching with your students?
Yeah, and also, yeah, kind of multi-instrumental work. That's one of the things I enjoy the most is working with a student on piano, guitar, drums, two out of the three or even all three sometimes, and really connecting, the foundations of those instruments together and using one instrument to support the other in different ways, you know. If a piano or guitar student is struggling with rhythm, you know, then I'm going to work with them on some drumming, some kind of body clapping and counting and drumming and really going to the root of the issue and the kind of working it out that way. And then when I bring them back to the guitar or the piano, then all of a sudden they're playing it perfectly in rhythm, you know. So I've been teaching for so long that, you know, I sort of know how to efficiently, you know, work out all those things with students and the kind of the best way to go about it. And I enjoy that a lot. I enjoy working with students, with songwriting, composing, music production, and because I also do a lot of like film and commercial composing work, and that's important to me, and gives me a chance with the students to get them using, you know, all the instruments and layering them together, and kind of allows them for a deeper understanding and perspective on their sense of time and feel and how things line up and lock together and work together. It's a little more of a magnifying glass, you know, into their own work.
Are the ways that you approach teaching that are different than the way you were taught?
I mean, Yeah, I think it's a mix. I mean, for example, when I started drum lessons, you know, around age 9, 10 or so, I still use a lot of the main kind of books and resources, foundational things that, you know, my teachers started me on because they're, you know, really, really good resources. I think I do incorporate another element, maybe that some of my teachers incorporated, which is, you know, instead of presenting, you know, a beat or a pattern or exercise, kind of presenting the student with every written out, you know, variation and version of it, where you're just holding their hand through the entire thing, I like to, you know, introduce, you know, kind of like some main concepts with how to work with it or expand on the exercise or the pattern, or, and then let the student really have more kind of creative time on their own to discover. I think that's important. So not always walking them through everything and letting them have this sense of, discovering through themselves what they like, what they can do with something. And I think that's important. And I do remember my teachers kind of, you know, teaching that way. And I think that's one of the things, you know, it's a little different too. Like, I mean, it's a little bit of a side note, I guess. But, you know, now with YouTube and all these different apps, you know, and you can find anything, you know, instantly and see exactly how the person's doing it. You know, it's a lot more like just copying, like verbatim, you know, and not having to kind of think through, you know, as creatively or kind of eliminating the process of discovery because everything's just right there all the time and exactly how it is or whatever, you know, where, you know, when I was younger, you know, 9 times out of 10, there wasn't a video of something, right? You had to really listen and pick out different things and go to the library and find the CD or cassette or find the record, hoping they have it, you know. And that process, you know, kind of made it more meaningful in different ways and maybe led you to discover something else, you know. You know, it was kind of some more open creative process that I think used different parts of the brain and help you maybe discover more creatively, like your own voice, you know, versus just like a lot of, sort of copying. So I don't know, maybe that's just me being old.
No, like, I mean, this topic and related things come up pretty often with my guests. And I think anyone, even people in, you know, younger people still maybe didn't grow up with the internet the way it is now that I talk to, but most of us are older and didn't grow up with it at all. So, yeah, people grew up with a limited record collection, with the radio, maybe going to a few concerts, and then it because your world is smaller, you could go deeper sometimes. It wasn't so scattered. You know, you could be more focused. So,
yeah, and it really gave, you know, I feel like gave me more time to discover, you know, what was inside of me and who I was. And that ended up being incredibly important, you know, because, you know, when I was a kid, I was always picking up different instruments and kind of experimenting, just kind of messing around and just taking time to discover things. And then in high school, for sure, you know, I was recording on a 4-track cassette recorder and layering different guitar parts and drum parts and piano parts and, you know, different things and learning about songwriting and composing and just creating, you know, and little did I know that all that work, you know, along with all my multi-instrument kind of studies and focus and rhythm, that I would be drawing upon all of that suddenly with composing myself, you know, as like a focus because of my ear problems. But I was all kind of unknowingly setting myself up for that, you know, kind of perfectly with everything that I was doing. And the nice thing too about like studying drums and percussion is you kind of expected to, you know, be well versed in all styles of music as a professional drummer. you know, sometimes, you know, like with guitar, and like, you know, oh yeah, that person's kind of a rock guitarist, or that's a jazz guitarist, you know. But typically with a professional drummer, they're kind of expected to be able to play all styles of music. So I had the opportunity to study all that. So I kind of bring everything together in my own concoction. You know, sometimes I say, my music is, you know, kind of like the lush strings and textures of classical music with the kind of excitement of jazz improv, you know, with kind of world music rhythms and complexities all kind of smashed together in a kind of more popular song form, you know, like 3-4 minute song form. Because that's just like a reflection of everything that I grew up doing. You know, like I listened to a lot of rock music when I was younger, played a lot of rock music. So that 3-4 minute song form is there and ingrained in me, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, you know, chorus or whatever. And then, grew up playing orchestras and jazz big bands and rock groups and world percussion groups, you know. It's fun to just kind of take all my favorite things from, you know, and make my own thing with it. And that's, yeah, kind of what I do in a nutshell, I guess. Yeah. Opening, close. Yeah, I think that's how I think a lot when I write. Like my next album has a similar bookend thing. And sometimes I write the first and the last piece of the album first. Mm-hmm. Just again, sort of naturally. It's not something I set out to do. And then I end up sort of filling it in, you know. I don't know what that says about me, or but I feel like, having that starting and ending point just makes sense to me. And then I sort of discover, okay, well, what's in between there? What's the journey from the start to the end? That's just what makes the most sense to me.
Yeah.
This clip is from the reprise of the opening to Resonance.
As we record this, pretty recently, you had an opportunity to do the Ragdale residency.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I know that there's different disciplines of artists there. What kind of people did you meet? What were they?
Actually, right here is on that shelf is a Ragdale coffee cup. It's a new addition to the shelf. It was really amazing. It was actually an unexpected opportunity. I had not even heard of it, and so didn't even apply. But I guess every term they pick one composer, musician, one dancer, one visual artist, I believe. So it's mostly writers and poets. And I guess the composer, musician had to drop out the last minute, and they ended up reaching out to some different organizations and. Through the pipeline, I ended up getting recommended and picked. So yeah, I just tried to make the most of it. Luckily, it was close enough to Chicago. I could kind of go back and forth a little bit. But yeah, it was really interesting having the opportunity to be around a bunch of writers and poets. That's not the normal scene, you know, that I'm around. And it was a good reminder of just how inspiring and invigorating it can be to be around, you know, like different groups of creative people outside of your own little creative world. And yeah, it really gave me time to focus on some things I've been wanting to focus on. I kind of took it as a little sign from the universe, you know, that, you know, it's okay to slow down your teaching a little bit and focus on your own stuff a little more for a while. Yeah, I wrote like 4 new pieces while I was there, and about maybe 10, 12 other kind of musical ideas that I might develop. I wrote and finished 2 massive grants and submitted those. I got to spend some time in the prairie and woodland areas and take some nice photos and, yeah, kind of be in the quiet and connect with some nature. And did a little collaboration with the movement artist there and some of the writers. And, yeah, it was a really, really much needed experience. And, yeah, really grateful for it. Yeah, I just finished 6 days ago. It was the last day.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask you about your photography. I've enjoyed many of your beautiful photos on social media. Was that something you did before? Because I have this feeling like you've changed a lot over the course of your adulthood because of going through this crisis.
I mean, as far as photography, I don't know. I mean, I've always enjoyed, interestingly enough, I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, like in high school, I took a photography class and even had the chance to develop in the dark room with all the chemicals and all that. But when I was younger, there just wasn't, you know, we didn't have like the handy digital cameras or the phones, right? With good cameras. But I think I've always been excited about being creative in every capacity, whether it's with food or whether it's with photography or sculpture or painting or at one point in high school I even made design some clothing. You know, I just always most naturally expressed myself. Or, you know what I think it is, I mean, I think that's how I like think through things, you know, and like think through life, figure out solutions to problems, you know, how I get my any negative thoughts or negative energy out of me, you know, how I keep myself sort of lighter and just mentally and emotionally well, you know. It's just I have to constantly be doing something like that, something creative, because that doing that is like a rejuvenation, you know, and a way of thinking and learning about the world around me, right, and myself, and others. Yeah, so I think I've actually always been like that. I just, depending on what is available to me, I'll use it. And that's actually something I've come to terms with recently, too, is that, you know, like it doesn't matter that I'm not a classically trained concert pianist who's been studying since the age of 3, you know, I studied some piano when I was in high school and college, but that never was a main focus. But, you know, I've been studying music and rhythm my entire life, and that's the core of everything, and, you know, and so, but I've come to terms with, you know, I can express myself on any instrument, you know, that I choose, and, you know, it's going to be, you know, my voice and my thing, and creating another opportunity to share. And, I feel good about that. And I'm, excited about, yeah, just continuing the journey. And, I like to just, try to inspire, you know, my students and other people to just, you know, not close themselves off or shut themselves off from just different creative opportunities around them, and kind of exploring different lineages of things or whatever. Yeah, it's always been important to me.
Well, Joel, it was so great to meet you today, and thanks so much for joining me here.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at LeahRosemond.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support this series, that would be wonderful. I'm an independent podcaster, and I really do need the help of my listeners. All the links are in the show notes. The podcast theme music was written by Nick Cold. Have a wonderful week.